Even when you have everything adjusted as perfect as you think you can get it, you're still going to lose a few kernels going out the back. But if you do things properly, you can save at least 98 or 99% of the crop. We must therefore pray for the prudence and wisdom to know how to correct and how to fulfill our daily duties so that we can be God's instrument in bringing at least 98 or 99% of the souls he has entrusted to our care into the elevators, that is, into the kingdom of heaven for eternity. If we are harsh and cruel, they do not practice that very important virtue of moderation, it will be quite certain that we will blow very many of those out the back that we should have been able to save for eternity. Or else we will not be able to separate the wheat from the chaff. We cannot be too lenient and we cannot be too harsh. Moderation is a very important virtue, which seems not to be practiced as it should be anymore in these times. But now let us consider that finally the farmer did get a truckload of wheat cut with his combine. So one of his helpers is taking the truckload of wheat toward the elevators. If he drives the truck more than about 35 miles per hour, he'd just as well not have loaded the wheat into the truck, because he will blow it all back out again, going too fast toward the elevators. Shows us again the very great importance for the virtue of moderation, for haste makes waste. And of course, if the driver goes real slow, he will not be back to the field again when the man operating the combine is ready to empty his bulk tank. Pray for the grace of prudence, wisdom, and especially also for moderation. If the truck driver arrives back at the field and then begins to load again on the run, as they say, which means the truck driver is moving and the combine is still cutting the wheat, the truck driver and the man running the combine certainly have to work together. If the truck driver speeds ahead too much, he will overrun the chute spout and all the wheat will go right on the ground behind his truck. If he is not a good truck driver, he will stall out in the engine, and then the combine driver, before he can get his combine stopped, will be shooting the wheat out over the cab of the truck. The truck driver will have to go back and shovel all that wheat up again by hand into his truck. Once again, time lost and energy wasted. If the truck driver gets too close or too far away from the combine, the same result, the wheat spills out onto the ground, which shows us once more the great need to work together in peace, harmony, and unity. We should pray fervently the prayer to St. Joseph the Worker, to pray to work with order, moderation, and patience. Every time the truck driver gets another load of wheat to the elevators, the man who runs the elevator will take out a small portion for a sample. He will carefully weigh that sample of wheat and check it out to see if it is too wet or too green or too full of weeds or has already gone to seed. So if you ever fellow at the elevators, you know that if some farmer comes in there too late at night and his wheat is wet, or if he cuts before it is ripe and is too green, or if he gets up somehow and gets a load in early in the morning, it's still too wet, the dew is on it, what does the man at the elevator tell him to do? Drive right on through, friend. You may not unload that wheat in our elevators. It will rot out the other crops already dumped in here, or else eventually it will set the place on fire, just like putting up wet hay will eventually catch your barn on fire. Just take it home and dump it to the hogs, or do whatever you want to with it, but you may not dump it in here. So this shows us again that if we do not operate the way God designed, according to his laws and commandments, all of the souls we might have thought we were taking to heaven, we will find on General Judgment Day we're dumped out into hell. It had to be given to the hogs, that is, to the swine, that is, to the devils who went into the herd of swine and ran over the cliff. The man at the elevators will weigh that load of wheat down to the very last pound, which should remind us that God is keeping very close records, a very exact account of how much time we spend in his service. God is indeed keeping accounts of how many souls we are helping to save, how many of his children we're helping to bring back to himself. God keeps track of all of our thoughts, words, and deeds, and everything will have to be accounted for, whether we use it for good or for bad. God does not mark anything down incorrectly. He keeps very perfect records. Everything is exact and correct. Our eternal destiny will depend upon whether we have our name written in the book of life the moment we die. God wrote our name in the book of life the moment we were properly baptized. Unfortunately, we have the ability to erase that name from the book of life when we commit a mortal sin. Other souls have never had their name written in the book of eternal life. What are we doing to help save them? We know the man at the elevator is going to check our load of wheat to see if it is too wet or too green or too full of weeds. This reminds us again of the great need for superiors and parents and guardians of others to keep a very close watch over those whom God has placed under their control. If you have souls entrusted to your care, be very vigilant over them. See that they remain as they should, so that they are ready to stand before their judge, to be ready for their inspection the moment they die. That is, for their inspection at their particular judgment, and again, for the general judgment at the end of time. The wise farmer knows that to have a good crop, to bring any good thing into the elevator, he must work the whole year around, not just during the month or so given to the actual harvest time. Especially he knows he must work in the springtime to cut down on the weeds. And that is the way it is in the spiritual life. Every day we must work out our salvation with fear and trembling, especially during the springtime when the passions seem to be extra strong. We must do everything necessary to keep the weeds, to keep our passions under control. We must be very diligent, persevering, and prudent in applying the necessary spiritual exercises that cut down our faults, our sins, and our vices. The wise and prudent farmer will use his plow, his disc, his harrow, his spring tooth, his cultivator, his rod weeder, and other pieces of machinery to prepare everything for the final crop. He uses many kinds of equipment to keep down the weeds and to produce a good crop. Thus also, there are various spiritual exercises and we should use each of them at its proper time and in its proper way to cut down our vices and to increase in grace, merit, and virtue. The farmer is not satisfied with just going over the ground one time with his rod weeders. In a week or so, he knows those weeds will be up again. He needs to cut the weeds down frequently. And we cannot just apply the spiritual exercises one time and then forget them. We need to use them often. For example, the examination of conscience should be performed several times each day. And we should pray always, as it says in the sacred scriptures. As said above, the farmer has a various amount of different kinds of equipment to cut down the weeds, to plant, to cultivate, to harvest. So also, there are different spiritual exercises to cut down our vices, our sins, our faults, and other ways to plant, and other ways to cultivate virtue, and other ways to obtain the final harvest on General Judgment Day. All of them need to be used at the proper time and in their proper way. We know that Jesus Christ, the eternal truth, has warned us that even after we have done everything we can to cut down the weeds, there will still always be growing together the wheat and the cockle, the good and the bad, the just and the unjust. Therefore, to a certain extent, we expect that, knowing that it is true, among just 12 apostles, there was one you might call the cockle, the bad, the unjust. In every home, in every family, in every community, in every nation, in every religious house, you will find the good with the bad, the just with the unjust. Does that mean then that you should do nothing about trying to root out the evil? Certainly not. Because unless you do as much as you can to keep down the cockle, the weeds, the evil, it is certainly going to predominate. If you diligently, perseveringly, and faithfully work on your faults, sins, and vices, you will keep them under control. Grace is going to predominate, and you will be, so to speak, in very good standing when you stand before your judge at the elevator on the General Judgment Day. The farmer knows that all of the preliminary work he does of plowing, disking, harrowing, cultivating, planting, and so on is all just for one basic purpose: to bring in a good crop. That is the final result. That is when he gets his money back with profit. Since a wise, prudent farmer knows this and the value of a good crop, he is certainly going to work hard all the year long. He will make certain that all the necessary plowing, planting, weeding, and cultivating, and so on, do take place when and how they should. He will work as best as he can according to God's climate and nature and laws. Then the crop he wishes to have will be produced. He knows he will never have a crop if all he does is weeds or plows but never plants anything. If all you do is examine your conscience and try and root out your vices, but you never take time to do good to others and be charitable and plant virtue in your soul, what will you have when you get to the elevator? That is, when it is time for your particular judgment. Unless you plant virtue and grace in your soul, you will have nothing and in time of the harvest. Maybe more than any other occupation, the farmer knows that everything depends upon God, and how well he follows God's laws of nature and keeps his commandments. If God permits it to rain too often and at the wrong time, the farmer cannot get into the fields when he needs to do so. If God does not permit it to rain just after the crop is planted, the farmer will certainly not have near the yield as he would have had he received proper rain at the time he needed it the most. The farmer knows that a good rain, not a hard rain, just a nice gentle rain that soaks in when the wheat is in the boot, will produce many more bushels of wheat at the harvest time. And even if God gives the good rain at the right time and the farmer has a very bountiful harvest, he knows that until the wheat is actually into the elevators, everything can be wiped out in a few minutes of time with a hailstorm, or the field catches on fire, and such like things. So we must do our part and correspond with the grace we receive from God, keep His laws, observe His commandments, and do His holy will. It seems that every farmer that does live that way will always make a good living. He might have a bad year one year, but the next year, God will make up for it and give him a double bonus crop, so to speak. If we will just stay in there and do the best we can to persevere in keeping God's laws, observing His commandments, living according to His holy will, we will have our ups and downs, so to speak, to a certain degree, but in the end, when everything is leveled out and all judgments are final, we will be with God forever after. Obviously, the better the farmer has wisdom and knowledge and prudence and understanding to do the right thing at the right time, the better things will be for him. And as God corresponds in giving the rain and so on when he needs it, the farmer who lives according to the natural law and observes God's commandments will have the crop he needs every year. If the farmer is not prudent and he does not follow even natural reason, does not observe God's commandments, does not obey the laws, everything is a failure. What good does it do the farmer to go out there in January when there is snow on the ground to run his combine? How stupid is the farmer who goes out there in July just before it is time to harvest and using his plow destroys his whole crop? No, you must do the right thing at the right time, or else you are, as you might say, the biggest, most foolish farmer there ever was. The farmer knows that everything depends upon whether he does his work, if he's going to bring in the crop at the end of the harvest time. And therefore, if he is too sick, or for some other reason cannot do the work himself, he will certainly see that the necessary work is accomplished. He will certainly hire another hand or have his own sons run and operate his farm properly the whole year around. He certainly may not just remain in bed and not let the work be accomplished by anyone. He is absolutely certain that if there is nobody out there working the fields, he will have no crop at harvest time. Even if the sick farmer knows very much about how to farm, he knows all about the different kinds of crops and how to plant and when to plant and everything about them. He understands very well all of the different kinds of equipment and how it should be operated and when. He may have a very good understanding of the whole picture, when to plant and how to harvest. But if he does not do the work himself and does not have anyone else do it, all of his knowledge will not bring in even one kernel of wheat. Even if he has the very best equipment but he does not operate it and nobody else operates it, he will have no crop whatsoever. And so it does not take a super brilliant mind to know that if the farmer does not operate the equipment or have someone else take care of his farm at the ways and times necessary, that his farming will be a complete failure. Certainly, any kind of wise farmer, if he cannot do his work, he will have his sons or some other hired hands do the work for him. He will have no unnecessary delays, for he knows that every day lost is just that, time lost, money down the drain. The same applies to our spiritual life. We may have very much knowledge about what spiritual authors and the saints have told us, but if we do not apply that to our life, we do not have anything to show for it on Judgment Day. There may be bishops, priests, and other clerics living right now who know very much about the teachings of the Catholic Church. They may know very much about theology and all the other necessary sciences. They might be as smart as St. Thomas Aquinas and St. Robert Bellarmine and St. Bonaventure and all the others put together, but all of their knowledge will not help to save a single soul if they do not apply it properly and live according to God's laws, commandments, and the teachings of the true church. They must apply that knowledge properly and go out there and harvest those souls. They do not go to the elevator on their own. On a farm, there is work for everyone, for the farmer and his wife and his children and everyone. So also in the spiritual life, there is work for everyone. If there is unity and we all work and pray together, then we will stay together and bring many other souls with us to heaven. Those who do not work should not eat. So again, we know that a wise farmer will run very much the same schedule as his animals. Early to bed and early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise, especially during the actual time of the harvest. The farmer will be up very early in the morning. Before the sun comes up, he will be up, pray, go to Mass, have his breakfast. He will be out there in plenty of time to grease his machinery, put the fuel in, and have it ready to go into the field as soon as the sun is up and the dew leaves. When a farmer buys a new piece of equipment, such as a combine, or even if he has the old one, when it comes close to harvest time, he will probably even then go look in his operator's manual to remind himself how that equipment should be operated. He will review the instructions again, if necessary, to find out where all of those hidden grease cirques are at. If you have ever worked on the combines, you know that sometimes you need to spin a little pulley wheel around partway to where a hole lines up that you can put your grease gun in there and grease those hidden grease cirques. Obviously, if you do not do that, that moving machinery inside will not operate properly for very long. So in the spiritual life, we have to know how God wants us to live. That means we should thoroughly examine our conscience. We should use the various spiritual exercises to look inside, to, so to speak, find those hidden faults, to root out those deep rooted vices. Study what the spiritual writers and the saints have written for us to learn how to properly take care of our spiritual life. We must find our predominant faults and our other vices and then apply the proper application to them. The farmer certainly needs to read the operator's manual, or at least know what kind of fuel goes into his fuel tank to know what kind of grease to use and not some kind of penetrating oil. He should know what he is doing. The same applies to our spiritual life. We are, so to speak, God's machinery, God's equipment. We are God's property. We must follow the laws he has laid down for us. We must learn what God wants us to do, to take care of our body and our soul, and then do it. If we violate those instructions, if we ruin that equipment, how can we possibly be pleasing to God? For example, if that combine was supposed to run on gasoline, and the farmer came along and put in diesel fuel, he certainly has a problem. As mentioned before, it often says, near to the gas cap, buy clean fuel and keep it clean. If you do not follow those kind of instructions, you are violating a necessary law that you must observe. When you violate any of the natural or the eternal laws of God, you are in great trouble, spiritually speaking. If the farmer deliberately puts the wrong kind of fuel in his tank, adds some kind of poison, he knows he is going to have great problems. So how do we think that we can abuse God's property and not end up with great problems? And there is more than one way you can abuse the equipment than just putting bad kinds of fuel or other foreign things into the gas or the diesel tank. And also, we know there are other ways people can abuse their bodies than just consuming poison or smoking or taking drugs. Of course, a farmer knows his equipment is wearing out every time that he is using it. Say, for example, his combine, although it contains many movable parts, if he does take proper care of it, maintains it according to the designs of the one who made it, then he knows that that combine will give him good service and last many years. If he is negligent in proper maintenance, he is doing damage to the equipment. And as mentioned in a previous talk, our bodies are wearing out from the day that we are born, but still we must do what we can to follow God's laws and taking care of them. Observe the natural law and do nothing that will damage God's equipment, God's property. We belong entirely to God, our body and our senses and everything about us. Who would think that a farmer was very wise who went fishing just at the time when the crops should have been harvested? Farmers do not go fishing during the harvest time, except maybe on Sundays, if they are wise and prudent in living according to any of God's laws. This is the time to work. The time to rest is after all of the crops have been brought in. And then maybe the farmer will go over to the coast and go salmon fishing if he had a good crop and made a nice profit. That is the way it is in our spiritual life. Now is the acceptable time. Now is the time to work out our salvation with fear and trembling. Now is when we should be corresponding with God's grace and helping to save souls. We should do all we can to root out vice and sin from everyone in the world according to the duties imposed upon us in our state of life. If we do our part during our time here on earth when we should be working, then we shall have a very glorious eternity in which to rest. Come thou, blessed of my Father, enter into the joy of the Lord. The bigger the crop, the more souls we saved, then the greater will be our joy, our amount of recreation, or if that's the way you think of it, the greater will be our eternal resting place for all of eternity. You might compare that to a farmer just going to a local little fish pond where it's not even big enough to get a good boat into it, as compared to going out onto the ocean for a nice salmon cruise. Obviously, there are times when it is necessary for the farmer or his sons or his hired hands, for all of them, to stay up all night or a great part of the night fixing the equipment, especially during the harvest time. If the equipment breaks down, it is very necessary to get it repaired and to operate properly again. If the farmer's equipment breaks down during the critical part of harvest time, he should have certain people stay up, do the welding or whatever is necessary to repair it. But that does not mean that his wife and children and all the neighbors and everybody else in the county has to stay up just because his equipment broke down. It only means that those who have that further duty stay up, the mechanics and the welders, whoever may be necessary, which he would hire to repair his broken equipment. And so it is that certain people do stay up all night and are blessed by God for doing so, such as nurses, doctors, certain policemen. But it does not mean that the whole world should run in that type of a schedule. Read again what the popes have said, and you will find that it is God's will that we operate much like the chickens, early to bed and early to rise. We are to take care of following the laws of nature, and that is what human nature is all about. There are certain days when all Catholics, or a great part of them, will stay up in the middle of the night, such as during Christmas midnight mass, and for the most glorious feast of the Easter Vigil. But the normal thing is to live much like the chickens, early to bed and early to rise. That's the way you will be healthy, wealthy, and wise. Consider once more this farmer we began speaking about, who had the whole Northwest to harvest. He may have several combines out there working, himself running the biggest one with a 24 or a 30-foot header on it. If the main farmer is running that biggest combine, obviously he should be able to cut more wheat than his sons or his hired hands coming along with combines that only have an 8-foot header. And so it is much the same way in the hierarchical structure of the church. There are bishops and others who are more important, and they in many ways can do more than the others. Their spiritual sons, the priests, they have greater jurisdiction, if they have it at all, through the true church, and they have more authority. They can ordain, they can confirm, and a pope is, of course, the pastor over all the other pastors. So there are different categories in God's divine plan. The husband is the head of the household. He has different authority over his wife and his children. That is God's divine plan, no matter how much some people rebel against it. Let us now go out into the harvest field where we have this main farmer with his larger combine. And following him are his 5 or 6 sons with smaller combines trying to take in the harvest. If there are 7 combines out in this big field cutting down the wheat, and one of them breaks down, even if it is the main farmer's biggest machine, should all the others stop just because he stops? Should they not rather just pull around and keep on cutting, keep on doing the necessary work? Remember, there is very much to be harvested. The field is so large that the machines will probably not make even one lap around the outside edge. And so if one machine stops, do all the other machines stop along with them? Certainly, if the main combine or any other one breaks down, certain people will be there working diligently, putting in long hours to get it repaired again so that everyone can be operating properly. But if the main farmer's machine breaks down, does he just stop everybody because he is stopped? Any wise and prudent farmer knows he must just signal his sons to go on around and keep working with the harvesting. Why should everything stop or be bogged down just because the main farmer on his biggest machine no longer is able to operate the way he should be able to do so? As the time of the harvest goes on, there is a good probability that a rainstorm might start to come in. Just because it is cloudy and overcast, does that mean you do nothing? It is true the wheat may be a little bit tough and harder to cut, but does that justify not making any effort to cut any of the crop? It will still not be so bad that you will get docked that much at the elevator and be refused to put it in at the elevators. At least not until it is actually rained on it. In the world today, it seems there is a very big storm threatening the destruction of all mankind. St. Pius X told us that, even back at the turn of this century, the conditions in the world were worse then than they were at the time of Noah, when God destroyed all of mankind except 8 people. In the early 1900s, the morals of the country and of the world were far better than they are now, toward the very end of this same century. How much longer will God hold off his just chastisements? Does that mean then that we are not to go out there and harvest as many souls as we can, do the best that we can to work for the salvation of souls and doing God's holy will? Or does the farmer just stay in the house and say, well, there is a storm blowing in, so I'm going to just stay here and eat and drink myself to death and eat up all the profits that I'm not going to make anyway? What do you really think a farmer would do if he had a crop as big to harvest as the entire Northwest? I think he would get as many combines out there operating as he could. Would it not be a very beneficial thing for him if for every truckload of wheat he got to the elevators, he could have another combine come in to cut more wheat? That is kind of the way things are in working for the salvation of souls. Every soul that we can convert and help to save is also another instrument in converting other souls. We know that is one thing about the general judgment. We will then receive our reward or our punishment according to the way that we've worked to save souls or be the instrument that helped to damn souls. Again, we know that a good and holy farmer will work joyfully and hard the entire year long. He knows it is important to be out there picking up rocks and welding and repairing his equipment during the winter months. So also, no one that has true zeal for souls is going to complain about the hard work, which sometimes may be thought of as the dirty jobs. It is all part of bringing in the harvest. He will repair all damages and do the best to keep himself in good shape. Let us say this farmer rents equipment because he's not able to buy all of those machines for himself. The farmer still needs to take just as good of care of all the rented equipment that belongs to another as he does his own, if he wants them to properly fulfill their daily duty, the purpose for which they were made. If he does not take care of them, puts dirty fuel into their tanks or whatever else, obviously you know what the results will be. How very enjoyable it can be to work for a farmer who has order and neatness around his farm. For a farmer who does not leave his equipment set out in the weather or be ruined unnecessarily. A good farmer does not just leave his equipment broke down wherever it might have been, in the middle of the road or in the middle of the field. How good it is for brothers to work together in peace and harmony. How enjoyable it is to live with a family that works together, that prays together, that practice true charity ones toward another. They help one another with their chores. They go out of their way and make sacrifices to help each other. Good neighbors are more than willing to swap their equipment and to come over and help these other neighbors out. That is what everyone should be able to say of us. See how these Catholics love one another? The word quickly spreads around among those men who go out looking for jobs. I really enjoy working for that particular farmer. His family has such peace and order in their lives. They're very kind and charitable. I never hear them screaming and feuds and discord and chaos and confusion in their family. They are always looking out for things they can do for another rather than expecting others to do so much for them. They have a very good attitude in living the first commandment and the other, which is like unto it. It is a great joy to be around them, since they make a total effort to live according to God's laws and commandments. There are many other sermons we gave and could give to try and teach the people how to live a life of virtue and holiness and observe God's laws. But besides the duty of offering Mass and preaching sermons, we also had the other duty of instructing catechumens. Therefore, I studied the Catechism and what St. Thomas Aquinas and other spiritual writers wrote. Therefore, I might tell the catechumen that according to St. Thomas Aquinas in question 79, St. Ambrose says that sin is a transgression of the divine law. St. Augustine says, sin is a word, deed, or desire against the law of God. Under question 91, St. Thomas Aquinas, again according St. Augustine, says, that law which is the supreme reason cannot be understood to be otherwise than unchangeable and eternal. And further, again, quotes St. Augustine, saying, the eternal law is that by which it is right that all things should be most orderly. And a gloss in Romans 2:14, St. Thomas writes, when the Gentiles who have not the law do by nature those things that are of the law, comments as follows, although they have no written law, yet they have the natural law, whereby each one knows and is conscious of what is good and what is evil.